From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm legendary anchorman Bill Curtis, filling in for Carl Kasell, and here is your host at the Orpheum Theater in Minneapolis, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you so much. Thanks, everyone. We've got a great show for you today. We've got NFL reporter Michelle Tafoya telling us what it's like to stand next to giant, aggressive men high on adrenaline. Speaking of which, nice to see you again, Bill Curtis.
Nice to see you too, Peter.
Now, Bill wanted to come with us on this trip to Minneapolis because this is the place, Minnesota, where great public radio is born, as we all know. Yes? And Bill wanted to bring his own special approach to that tradition.
It was a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, because people didn't know a remorseless killer lurked in their midst.
We're interested in the stories you have to tell. Give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Kevin Dubé calling from Hartford, Connecticut.
Hey, how are things in Hartford?
Terrific.
I'm glad to hear it.
Sprung, hopefully we're going to be just north of the cicada line.
There you are. Do you have like a wall? Are you manning the wall like in Game of Thrones to keep the cicadas from reaching Hartford?
Chirping is coming.
Chirping. Because once they get to Hartford, it's all over.
That's right.
Then they get an I-94 and all the way to Boston.
We draw the line here!
What do you do there in Hartford?
I'm a judge of the Superior Court.
Oh, really?
Wow.
I guess that means we should be nicer then. Do judges, I mean, when you walk, I mean, judges are powerful people. When you walk around just in your normal day, do people treat you differently when you're out of the robes?
Not a bit. When at court, it's Your Honor this and Your Honor that, and then I come home to two teenage girls.
Well, welcome to our show, Kevin. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, it's a correspondent for CBS Sunday Morning and the host of My Grandmother's Ravioli on the Cooking Channel. It's Mr. Mo Rocca.
Hi, Your Honor.
Next up, it's a writer for HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher. Mr. Adam Felber is here. Great to see you.
Hi, Kevin.
Finally, it's a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning and the only member of our panel named after a George Michael song. It's Faith Saley.
Well, Judge Kevin.
Kevin, welcome to the show. You're going to start, of course, with Who's Bill? This time, Bill Curtis, filling in for Carl, is going to recreate for you three quotations in the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you'll win our prize. Carl Kasell's voice on your home answering machine. Are you ready?
I hope so.
Me too. Here's your first quote. It's from the First Lady, Michelle Obama.
I could take up a whole afternoon talking about his failures.
The First Lady was talking about whose many failures now in the news?
I would think her husband.
Yes, President Obama's failures. The Commander-in-Chief, President Obama, is having a bad couple of weeks, and Mrs. Obama wasn't helping with that comment. He's got the IRS scandal, the Benghazi scandal, the spying on the AP scandal, and now the investigating a Fox News reporter scandal, all happening at the same time. The only good news in all this is that if he gets one more punch on his frequent scandal card, he gets a free felony.
I thought those bangs were going to soften her, but she is just...
No,
she is relentlessly feisty.
She is pretty feisty.
Yeah.
Have you noticed all how many jokes President Obama makes about his wife's temper?
Yeah, there's kind of a Roper's Man. Thing happening there.
Yeah, there really is.
Gets in little digs at him all the time, and he just...
There's a real fear in his voice, I think.
Barack! You think this mission in Afghanistan failed? You should have seen him last night.
You call that a weapon of mass destruction?
I just imagined the leader of the free world tripping over an ottoman in the White House. This week we found out that the Justice Department has been investigating Fox News reporter for James Rosen for being part of a criminal conspiracy. They said he was encouraging a source to divulge national security secrets. Basically, they're accusing reporter James Rosen of being a reporter. Now, in going after Rosen, this is true. The Department of Justice allegedly went so far as to get the phone records of his parents on Staten Island. Mrs. Rosen's response to this was phone records. What phone records? He never calls. Let me tell you, Mr. Justice Department, the only leaks are coming out of my eyes. What a son.
Meanwhile, poor CNN. Why doesn't anyone investigate us?
Yeah. Well, as soon as they report something true,
they will.
Sure.
Yes.
Here is your next quote. It is Senator John McCain grilling aggressively a CEO in a Senate hearing.
Why the hell do I have to keep updating apps on my phone all the time?
What company's CEO was being questioned so aggressively?
Apples.
Apples, yes. Apples indeed. Very good. Apple's CEO, Tim Cook, had gone before Congress to defend the way his company, Apple, had avoided paying any taxes at all on about $100 billion of income. But McCain took the opportunity to complain about his iPhone, and about all those gadgets and doodads were too hard to use. It was the angriest we've seen McCain since he chaired the subcommittee on how the hell do I work this remote? Apple had avoided taxes through this very complicated but legal scheme. They incorporated a shell company in Ireland, but it still operated in the U.S. It's a complicated scheme, and we're pretty sure this is how they came up with it. Siri, where can I shield my money from the U.S. government?
Calling Irish Tax Shelter.
There you go.
Yeah.
You know what I think they need to do?
What?
The Congress needs to instruct the IRS to start singling out corporations like this by searching for them. Yeah.
It's a very good idea.
I mean, if they have information, it makes them think. That's the thing.
I know. All right. Very good, sir. Here is your last quote.
Run control to Major Tim.
That was the headline on the UK's Metro newspaper announcing Major Tim Peake will be Britain's first official what?
That's hard.
It is a little hard. We were amazed to see this.
Guessing here, astronaut?
Yes, astronaut. Oh. It turns out that now, 2013, the United Kingdom is naming their first astronaut. It's one wee step for a bloke, one giant leap for
a
bloke kind.
But wasn't there the astronaut in the Flintstones was British? Do you remember that?
Oh,
little...
well, yeah.
But he was from the future, Mo. Could have been any kind of time, right?
No, other than that, I mean.
Okay.
In 2015, Major Tim Peake will become Britain's first official astronaut in space, meaning the only people to beat the UK into space are the Americans, the Russians, the Canadians, the Chinese, a dog, a monkey, Richard Branson, that guy from NSYNC, and a jar of kimchi. The British people are excited about the microgravity research that Major Tim will do and how he will inspire young Brits to follow careers in science. But more than anything, Britain is excited to finally have a guy, a Briton, who can literally look down on every other person in the world. Doesn't it seem a little crazy?
Yeah,
I mean,
well,
just now, they're finally getting to space. The U.S. just scrapped our space program, and 2 years later, the U.K. is getting started.
Yeah, they've got an astronaut now.
Yeah.
You'll see. Next, they'll get a dentist. Am I right?
Yeah.
Hey!
Bill, how did Kevin do in our quiz?
The judge ruled 3 correct.
There you are. Very well
done. Thank you, Judge.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
We want to remind everyone that most weeks they can join us at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago. For tickets and more information on all our shows, go to WBEZ.org, or you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Adam, there's almost nowhere left in the world free from advertising, but at least we have the refreshing, clean taste of Pepsi Cola to comfort us. Anyway, one advertiser... One advertiser has found a new frontier. They're putting ads where?
In other advertisements.
That would be clever, but no.
Gillette wouldn't want to advertise in this place because people would then associate it with
well,
shaving.
Shaving. This is sort of the antithesis of shaving.
Oh, inside people's beards.
Yes, in their beards.
What?
That's true. Sure, you've seen some men around who seem to be advertising the brand of buffalo wings they ate last night in their beards. But this is different. The root beer company A&W will be paying bearded men $5 to attach a tiny sign to their beards. Because when you're selling something you want people to drink, you want them thinking about a great big wad of hair. And I mean, it's a great idea. Of course, we can't do advertising in NPR. But we want to remind you that support for NPR comes from some guy's beard. More at mangylookinghobo.org.
Why? I wonder if ZZ Top could be their spokespeople.
Oh, yeah.
God.
ZZ Top is like the Times Square of beard advertising.
Yeah, I know.
You made it there.
Yeah, the Duck Dynasty guys are going to make out like bandits.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy.
If the Taliban ever sells out, they're set.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis, filling in for Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Adam Felber, Mo Rocca, and Faith Seeley. And here again is your host at the Orpheum Theater in Minneapolis, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Right now it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Bluff the listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Dan Kearns from Burbank, California.
Beautiful downtown Burbank. How are things there?
Sunny and smoggy right now.
That usually is. And what do you do there?
I am a gaffer for film and television.
That is great. You're a gaffer. I've always wanted to talk to a gaffer because what the hell is a gaffer?
A gaffer is the chief lighting technician.
The chief lighting technician. So
correct.
Your job is to like hang the lights and connect the lights and execute the lighting plot that the designer gives you.
No, my job is to tell other guys to do that.
Oh! All right, here you go, Dan. Welcome to our show. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Bill, what is Dan's topic?
One man's trash is another man's weird treasure.
To you, it's just a plastic six-pack ring, but with a little folding and an Etsy account, it's a $30 artisanal bracelet. This week, we read about something normally considered trash being highly sought after. Our panelists are going to tell you about it, but of course only one of them is telling the truth. Guess the real one, and you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to go?
I am.
First, let's hear from Adam Felber.
Remember the 80s when we crazy kids used to strategically rip our jeans because it made us look cool? It gave us cred, much like the carefully tied bandanas on our heads and the street-ready leg warmers. Well, kids today are doing the same thing, only they're doing it by smashing their smartphone screens. According to the Washington Post, nowadays, when it comes to phones, crack is far from whack. Says youth spokesperson Brittany Lofton, it's like this total trend because it's not like we're rushing out to get them fixed. A crack screen is like a really cool scar. This conversation starter has gotten so popular that you can now buy simulated shattered screens as plastic overlays or downloaded home screens. Either way, it's the fashion that definitely says, I'm street, much like the new trend waiting in the wings, designer masking tape for the bridge of your intentionally smashed eyeglasses.
Smashed smartphone screens. A sign of status amongst the youth of today. Your next story of creative recycling comes from Faith Saley.
When 13-year-old Raina Lowenstein celebrated her bat mitzvah last month in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, she became a woman in the eyes of her Jewish faith. But as the great Whitney Houston song goes, she really became every woman because she found a way to turn her coming-of-age bash into a charity for mothers, breastfeeding mothers, who can wear used yarmulkes as breast pads. I was going to, like, a ton of bars and bots this year, Raina says, and I just got disgusted by all the boys tossing their yarmulkes into the trash after temple. Then two things happened. Raina was at her cousin's bar mitzvah when Brad Mislow spilled a Coke Zero on her. She discovered that Brad's yarmulke was remarkably absorbent. Then Raina, whose mom is currently nursing Raina's 19-month-old baby brother Isaac, noticed that the breast pads her mother uses to stop lactation leaks were just about the size of a kippa. So she decided to donate the yarmulkes of her, quote, friends who are boys but not boyfriends, to the maternity ward of Lancaster General. She placed a collection bin between the henna tattoo booth and the mobile grilled cheese truck that her parents hired for the party. Honestly, Raina says, it does kind of weird me out that my brother has teeth and can tell mom he's thirsty, but I still want to be super supportive of breastfeeding.
All right, excess yarmulkes being used as breast pads for needy pregnant women. Your next story of recycle and reuse comes from Morocco.
It's no secret that a Pringles can is reusable as a container for tennis balls, as a homemade kaleidoscope, as something for the late night enjoyment of college sophomores. But for the Kokomo Indians of Indiana, Pringles cans are a way of honoring the salamanders they revere. They use them as caskets. Quote, the Kokomos buried their salamanders in clay cylinders, says anthropology professor Ann Bagnoli. Larger ones would be laid to rest lengthwise. The smaller newts would be stacked one on top of another. So a Pringles can makes a perfect salamander casket. Additionally, the airtight Pringles can preserves the salamander's moisture indefinitely without the heavy expense of embalming. And the plastic lid allows loved ones to view inside the burial chamber. One thing that's odd about all of this, the Kokomos use the cans of any of the 96 Pringle flavors except sweet mesquite. Says Professor Bagnoli, makes perfect sense. Salamanders hate sweet mesquite.
All right. Here then are your choices. Is it from Adam Felber, how cracked phone screens, instead of meaning you throw your phone away, for the youth of today means you show them to your friends because it means you're cool. From Faith Saley, how used yarmulkes from a bat mitzvah end up being breast pads for breastfeeding mothers. Or from Morocco, how used empty Pringle cans become ceremonial coffins for salamanders. As buried by the Kokomo Indians.
No, the Kokomo.
The Kokomo, excuse me. Jenny, Kokomo Indians who are listening, I apologize for mispronouncing your name. So which of these is, do you think, the true story of something that could be garbage not being garbage?
Well, I've actually seen a lot of cracked screens, so I'm going to go with A.
You're going to go with A. That's Adam's story about the cracked iPhone
screens. Excellent.
Smartphone screens. Well, we spoke to somebody who knew a little something about this reuse and recycle program.
This sort of underground idea has circulated that having a cracked cell phone gives you some kind of status.
Well done. That was Mark Bauerlein. He's the author of the book The Dumbest Generation, and he's talking about cracked smartphone screens. Well done. Congratulations, Dan. You got it right. You earned a point for Adam. You're telling the truth. Carl Castle will record the greeting on your voicemail. Well done, sir.
Thank you.
And now the game where we ask people who've achieved great things questions that diminish all their achievements. The job of the NFL sideline reporter is 3 parts glamour, 4 parts grit, and 10 parts fending off the advances of a Randy Hall of Fame quarterback. Michelle Tafoya is the Emmy Award-winning reporter for NBC's Sunday Night Football, but she spent time on basketball courts, softball diamonds, gymnastic mats, and now public radio quiz show Game Grids. Michelle Tafoya, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
So you are and have been for how long now, the sideline on-field reporter for NBC Sunday Night Football?
I'm entering my 3rd season for Sunday Night Football. Yeah. I spent about 8 seasons before that on Monday Night Football. Mm-hmm. And so if they come up with any other days of the week, I'll be happy to try
That's
those
exciting.
As well.
Yeah. And is this something you always wanted to do? Were you a football fan growing up?
I adored football growing up. But I must tell you, I find that being a reporter is so much easier than being a fan. Vikings fans got to agree with that. It is so hard.
Now, why is that? Because being a reporter seems like a hard job.
It is. No, it is. But the emotional roller coaster of being a fan, it's just not worth it.
That's an interesting message for somebody who works for Sunday Night Football to send.
But still, tune in each Sunday night.
Well, tonight, Michelle Tafoya's special segment, What the Hell is Wrong with You People?
Welcome back to You Disgust Me with Michelle Tafoya.
So how did you get into the... I am going to guess that it's harder for a woman to get into Major League Professional Sports Reporting than it is for a man. Am I right?
No!
You know what, though? Timing is everything. And I think I sort of followed the floodgates that were opened by Leslie Visser and Robin Roberts. And it had just started to become something that women could do. And I thought, I can do this.
Well, how did you prove yourself?
Oh, gosh. The best advice I ever got was go get a job somewhere.
Yeah.
So I went to Charlotte, North Carolina. I did 5 hours of sports talk radio every day, and that was my...
You did?
Yes.
That is the hardest job in the world.
It was not easy.
How do you talk about sports for 5 hours without boring yourself to death?
One time I was solo, and I found myself reading to my audience out of the newspaper because I had run out of material. But you do that all the time, don't you?
I did. I ran out of material 10 minutes ago. Couldn't you tell? I thought I'd bring you on and see what you had. I got nothing left. But I want to know how you got from there. Well, first of all, describe your job. You're the sideline reporter. You're the person they throw down to, as they say in the trade.
Yeah.
And you've got the reports on the sideline. Well, this guy's injured. Well, this guy feels this way.
Right.
That's what you do. Your job is to sort of provide on-field commentary.
Yes, on-field commentary, pregame interviews, postgame interviews. I talk to the coaches at halftime as they walk in or out of the locker room, and that's always a load of fun, especially the losing coach.
Can I ask you, when you talk to the losing team, do you kind of put on like a nice mommy voice? Or do you change your tone of voice?
Gee, Coach, it's not going so well, is it?
Do you do that? Because I've wondered about that.
Do you have a minute for me, Coach?
Do you do that?
No.
Is that how you approach it?
No. I mean, there are some... You get to know every single coach and how he's going to respond to you in that moment, and you just sort of brace for it.
What's the worst reaction you've ever gotten in that situation?
I cannot tell.
Really? Did somebody drop some profanity on you?
No, I always talk to them off camera because I can get more out of them, and then I come back after halftime and I report to the audience what I've been told.
So you came back and you're like, well, I just talked to the coach of the losing team and he suggested certain things that were anatomically impossible. Back to you. Is that what you did?
Well, you have to maneuver around that. I mean, because if you sell out the coach, you never get to talk to him again. So I don't want to sell out the coach.
I got to ask you about the locker room. Do you go into the locker room?
Yeah, I used to much more so in the NBA. And that's quite something.
And so, are these large, strong men in the best shape of their lives naked?
Pretty much, yeah.
Faith wants you to give details. I was just thinking about the NBA would be more difficult because when you think about what would be at eye level in that situation.
Yeah.
That's got to be awkward. Yeah.
Because I remember, this was now going back 20 years ago when the first female reporters were working major sports and they wanted to go into the locker room and do the same damn interviews that the male counterparts were doing. And some of the players were like, wait a minute, we don't want girls in here.
Yeah.
And those pioneers were like, nope, we're going in, we're doing our job. So is it awkward for you?
Let me tell you about my first time.
Oh, please.
Again, Charlotte, North Carolina, it's the Hornets hosting, because they were then the Hornets hosting the Houston Rockets. There's another joke there, but
the Rockets.
Were they ever?
So there you are.
So there I am, and I'm getting ready to go in, and this is the first time I've ever done this, and I'm just going to do some radio interviews for tape to take them back and turn them around. And I said to myself, I had a rule I established before I went in. My rule will be I will only look at their eyebrows. I won't even look in their eyes. I'm going to look at their eyebrows when I talk to them because that will make sure that I'm focused there and I can never be accused of looking anywhere else. And this was so long ago that the guy who opened the door said, "Lady in the locker room." It was like, you know, lady with a baby coming in. "Lady in the locker room." So everyone's kind of shuffling around, and I make a beeline for my guy that I'm going to interview. And I'm walking up toward him, and his eyes got to be like the size of paper plates, because what I didn't notice was that he was buck naked. I was too focused on his eyebrows.
Right, of course.
Yeah.
And you're charging him.
And the guy, a player sitting next to him says, "Ma'am, could you just turn around and let the man put a towel on?"
I thought, you know, when you turned around, he'd have the towel around his head to cover up his big eye.
I think one of the most, and again, I won't name names, but I remember doing an NBA game, and I was asked to go interview a player's wife in the stands about something. And I got there, and she came out to stand next to me in the on the steps there, and she was wearing a very low cut, and she was ginormous, and I couldn't even look at her eyebrows. I was too focused. But I did offer to donate some yarmulkes.
Michelle Tafoya, we're delighted to have you with us. We've invited you here to play a game we're calling
Enter at Your Own Risk.
Okay, so you're a female reporter. You are allowed inside the NFL locker room. You're a pioneer, but there are still places out there, Michelle, where they believe in cooties. We're going to ask you about famous men's only clubs.
Okay.
All right, get two questions right, and you win our prize. Bill, who is Michelle Tafoya playing for?
Daniel Schneider of St. Paul.
All right, here we go. Ready to play?
Nice. All right, Daniel, I'm going to do my best.
Here's your first question. One of the most famous all-male gentlemen's clubs in London was the Reform Club, where the fictional Phineas Fogg started and ended his trip around the world in 80 days. When Michael Palin of Monty Python's Flying Circus attempted to recreate the feat, he failed. Came close, but he failed. Why? A. While he was gone, the club viewed the classic Monty Python dead parrot sketch and decided Mr. Palin was too vulgar to be readmitted to the premises. B, he got back to London but couldn't be readmitted because he was poorly dressed. Or C, he tried to drive himself to the club in central London but got lost.
Oh, man. I'm going to say B.
You're going to say B, he got back to London but couldn't be readmitted because he wasn't wearing a jacket and tie.
Yes.
You would be right. That's what happened.
What? That's so exciting.
He left the Reform Club, traveled around the world in 80 days, came back, ran up the steps, but he was not wearing a jacket and tie. They wouldn't let him in the club, so he finished his journey on the steps. Now, one of the first all-male gentlemen's clubs in America was the Schuylkill Fishing Company of Philadelphia, a club that played a minor role in revolutionary history when what happened there? A, revolutionary officers hid inside from British pursuers who wouldn't enter because there were not members. B, George Washington himself went on a three-day bender there. Or C, Benjamin Franklin became the first and only member thrown out because of his horrible morals.
My.
Is there people saying C? Yeah.
There are people
all
saying
right,
C.
All right, C.
Actually, it was B. It was George Washington. The club was famed for its beverage known as Fish House Punch, which, according to legend, was so potent it knocked George Washington out of commission for 3 days. Okay, this is all very exciting. If you get this one right, you will win. Here's your last question. At the Burning Tree Country Club in Bethesda, Maryland, women are only allowed to visit the club when? A, on Women's Day, which is a holiday named after a magazine. B, according to the club rules, quote, at the point in their menstrual cycle when they're least likely to attract bears, unquote. Or C, in December, only to buy Christmas gifts for their husbands in the pro shop.
C.
Yes! Right!
Nailed it. That was all net. That was all net, sister.
Absolutely.
Bill, how did Michelle do in our quiz?
She did great because she got two right.
It's out the fire, ladies and gentlemen.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm legendary anchorman Bill Curtis, filling in for Carl Kessel. We're playing this week with Mo Rocca, Faith Saley, and Adam Felber. And here again is your host from the Orpheum Theater in downtown Minneapolis.
Thank you, Bill. In just a minute, Bill pays tribute to his favorite Minnesota twin, Joe Reimauer. It's the Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Adam, without the shuttle program, NASA is searching for other ways to fill the endless hours of every day. This week, we learned the space agency is funding a project to create what?
Sippy cups.
No.
Seems like you could develop a pretty good sippy cup for zero gravity.
That's true.
So I'm going to stick with that answer. No. So the shuttle program's done, so they have to come up with something. So
yeah.
They're...
Well, it's a research project. It will have some application in space, they hope. I'll give you a hint. It's like if HP, Hewlett-Packard, and Papa John's had a baby.
Oh, yes. They're looking into printing food.
They're looking specifically...
3D food printing.
3D pizza printing.
Oh, pizza.
Yes, indeed. 3D pizza printing. And we're, like, excited. So NASA needs to figure out how to get food to their astronauts on long space trips. Their first idea, and this had the advantage of saving money, was to just order it from Domino's. And since it couldn't get there in 30 minutes or less, it would be free. But... scrap that. Plan B, pizza printing. The idea is you have a 3D printer, and instead of printing like a shape or a model, it prints a pizza. The fact that pizza printing technology is being realized just as recreational marijuana use is being legalized means that by 2016, no one will ever leave their house again.
Well, how the heck does it work?
Well, the idea is, this is interesting. The idea is you have these packets of basically food powder. And when you print the pizza, first it prints the dough, and then cooks it.
I think this is how Domino's does it, by the way.
Yeah, okay.
It might well be.
It prints the dough and cooks it, and then it prints tomato sauce on top of it, and then it prints something called a protein layer. But the whole idea is that eventually, if this technology gets perfected, you could have it everywhere and make anything. You could have it in the office, and people would be like, oh, God, who printed fish?
Also, as far as 3D printed foods go, pizza is about as 2D as you can possibly
That's
get.
That's true. It has that advantage. But it'd be delicious when we get rid of paper entirely and everything is printed on pizza. Pizza spreadsheets. Pizza post-its. Pizza love notes. And honey, I think we're out of toilet pizza.
Oh. That wouldn't be
pizza,
good at all.
Yeah, pizza wipes. Oy. That's
Now that we have British astronauts, we're going to have to print crumpets, I guess.
Faith, STEM visas are those visas that are given out to bring skilled foreign workers into the U.S. that we need for our economy. But this week, Bloomberg News reported that foreign tech workers are having to compete with whom for work visas?
Somebody who doesn't have skills.
Oh, they do have a skill. They can walk very insouciantly down a runway.
Models?
Yes, models. Every year, the United States gives out about 65,000 of these highly coveted temporary work visas. They're designed for people to come into the United States if their skills are necessary. Normally, they go to like highly educated people in high-tech fields. But in 2011, Anthony Weiner...
Of course.
...along with other activists concerned with the welfare of hot women... sponsored a bill adding foreign models to the pool of eligible applicants. Isn't this just what we said would happen? Foreigners coming here doing the jobs Americans don't want to do, like just standing there, making bored sex faces.
And staying thin.
Yes.
And then but they're only temporary visas.
Right.
So when it's time for them to leave, they'll turn around in a really sexy way.
Yes,
and
take off. Walk back
it's
to
a
the
pivot.
Borders.
It's a pivot.
They'll pivot.
Faith, you're familiar with the quiet car on trains in the East Coast, especially?
Love it.
Well, the Prague subway now has another sort of designated car. What is it?
Is it the opposite of quiet? Is it the noisy party car?
No.
The Prague party car?
It's for a different purpose, but it's definitely a dedicated car.
Oh, a different purpose.
Yeah.
Is it an amoral purpose? Is it?
No. It all depends on what your intentions are, I guess.
Oh, it's the meeting card.
It's the dating card. Yes, it's the dating card.
It's a love train.
It is. Prague. The city of Prague will be designating dating cars on its subways where singles can meet and have their hearts and probably wallets stolen.
No, you know what it is? It's a place where you can check each other out.
Ah!
It's hard to imagine how this is going to work.
It's going to be a great success, Peter. I mean, if there's one thing that most women, I think, are usually thinking is that, like, people aren't staring at me enough in trains.
Right.
I feel too comfortable.
Yeah.
I'd really like that stranger to touch me.
Yeah.
But what happens? Now we got so caught up in joking about it that we lost the substance of the story.
That is the tragedy here.
Well, it'll be like, I presume it'll be like, you know, singles mixers of any kind, where you can go and understand that everybody there is also single and looking to meet. So you get when they get in the designated car, and you know that everybody in the car is sort of looking there to...
Isn't there an Ashley Madison train?
Or at least a storage compartment for wedding rings as you walk in?
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, or you can check out the latest How to Do Everything podcast. This week, Mike and Ian tell you how to get rid of all those delicious cicadas. Hi, everyone. Wait, wait, don't tell me.
Hi there. Melissa Costin from Granite Falls, North Carolina.
Oh, you sound like you're from North Carolina, and I love that because it's so lovely. Are you a lifelong North Carolinian?
Yes, I am.
A Tar Heel?
Well, I don't say it that way, no.
What do you say?
I'm a huge Duke fan. So.
Oh,
she's a Blue Devil.
Melissa, welcome to the show. Bill Curtis here is going to read you three news-related limericks with a last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you will be a winner. Ready to play?
I hope so, yeah.
Here is your first limerick.
Leafy greens fill most people with fright. We're reluctant to take a big bite. But some veggies are pale, and they're also quite hale. It's okay to eat foods that are...
light.
Not light. It rhymes with that. One of the clues is pale. Let's hear it one more time, and I think you'll get it.
Leafy greens fill most people with fright. We're reluctant to take a big bite. But some veggies are pale, and they're also quite hale. It's okay to eat foods that are...
white.
White.
White! Yes! Now, either you have a very interesting Sybil-like multiple personality thing going on, or you have somebody there with you helping you, which is the case. So do you have some help there?
You're not going to buy that I sometimes talk really fast and deep?
Well, do it for me now. Show me your other voice.
Hello.
That's really good.
Oh, that's it.
On behalf of National Public Radio, I want to apologize to you for
doubting the word.
Yes,
it is white. We've heard for years that we need to eat our greens, right? Spinach, celery, broccoli, Mountain Dew. But researchers from Purdue University say we need to also eat our whites. Cauliflower, potatoes, cream of mushroom soup, whipped cream, paste. Packed with essential vitamins, nutrients, and adhesives. Yes! Lick it off the spackling knife. Marshmallows. It's a food group. Enjoy. Here's your next limerick.
Without coffee, my brain turns to mush. But each morning, I'm in a big rush. So I'll get some caffeine as my teeth get real clean from these chemicals here in my...
brush.
Yes! Very good. Brush. Notice you did that in your own voice. No time for your morning coffee. Good news. Colgate has invented a toothbrush that shoots caffeine into your mouth as you brush. Each brush comes equipped with a built-in caffeine capsule available in a variety of flavors, including minty fresh, spearmint, and stale coffee breath. Here's your last limerick.
That Dove sketch ad sings a false ditty. To hard facts, our soft ego shows pity. When our features we judge, our mind likes to fudge, and we all tell ourselves we are...
pretty.
Yes! About a month ago, Dove Soap released this ad that went viral. It was all about seeing yourself for how beautiful you really are, rather than the hideous monster you perceive yourself to be. Well, turns out we don't have that problem, because according to actual social science researchers, we actually are hideous monsters. In fact, most people think they're much more attractive than they actually are. Most other people, though. All you guys, you don't give yourself enough credit.
If we really thought that, would we be in radio?
That's true. Bill, how did Melissa do in our quiz?
Melissa did great. She got 3 correct.
Well done.
Good job, Melissa.
Good job. Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is now worth 2 points. Bill, can you give us the scores?
Adam has 4, Faith has 2, Mo has 2.
Okay. We have flipped a coin. Mo has elected to go first, so the clock will start when I begin your first question, fill-in-the-blank. Police investigators said Wednesday that they have linked one of the blanks to a triple homicide in Boston 3 years ago.
Boston bombers.
Right. Because she had made an opening statement, Representative Daryl Issa said Thursday that an IRS official had waived her right to blank.
She waived her right to the Fifth Amendment.
Right, to plead the Fifth. After repeated instances of power outages and unsanitary conditions, embattled cruise ship company blank reported low earnings and plunging stocks.
Carnival.
Right. On Thursday, Boy Scout delegates voted to end the organization's ban on blank.
On gay scouts.
Right, but not gay scout leaders. The Bacon food truck in San Francisco is being ordered to shut down because it blanks.
It smells like bacon.
It smells too much like bacon. Right, yes. Ray Manzarek, keyboardist and founding member of the rock band Blank, died Monday at age 74.
The Doors.
Yes. A helicopter and ground manhunt for the gunman who'd shot a Canadian cop in her leg was canceled after the cop realized blank.
That the cop had not actually been shot.
No, she realized that she had shot herself in the leg.
Okay.
When the officer was hit, she called for backup and forces converged to scour the area. Helicopters were deployed and 30 people were held for questioning. That is, until the officer noticed that one of the bullets was missing from her gun, and doctors noticed that her wound had come from above, as if she'd been shot by someone standing in the vicinity of her holster. Bill, how did Mo do in our quiz?
Well, you got 6 more points, so you totaled them all up. He has 14 points and is in the lead.
Oh, no, so well done. All right.
Yeah,
Faith, you are up next. Please fill in the blank, Faith. On Wednesday, Eric Holder revealed that 4 Americans overseas have been killed by blanks since 2009.
Drones.
Right. Oklahoma City Thunder player Kevin Durant said Tuesday that he would donate $1 million to victims of this week's blank.
Tornado.
Right. In spite of protests, the city of Chicago voted Wednesday to close down 50 blanks.
Schools.
Right. While accepting a Webby Award this week, the creator of the graphics interchange format said the acronym should be pronounced blank.
GIF?
No, JIF. He settled it forever. A Florida burglar was nabbed by police because he blanked while running away from them.
He lost his pants.
No, he stopped to get some beer.
Oh.
Because he failed to reclaim it for 2 months, this week Justin Bieber's blank officially became the property of Germany.
Monkey.
Right, fans were disappointed to learn that the new version of the blank gaming console will not work with their old games.
Xbox.
Right. Cincinnati Reds reliever Aroldis Chapman pitched the worst game of his career after blanking.
Michelle. After knitting all weekend and losing feelings in his hand.
No. After eating 18 guava and cream cheese danishes before the game. According to Philadelphia Phillies broadcaster Ricky Ricardo. That's his name. Chapman scarfed down 18 of the pastries and looked, quote, like he couldn't breathe. He walked the first batter and then gave up 2 home runs. Reds manager Dusty Baker didn't blame the pastries, saying his players used to do it all the time when he was the manager of the Cubs. Bill, how did Faith do in her quiz?
Faith got 5 right for 10 more points, but Mo is still in the lead, holding on at 14.
All right, then. So how many, then, does Adam need to win?
Oh, God, please lose.
Adam needs 5. Adam needs 5 to tie, 6 to win.
All right. This is for the game, Adam. Fill in the blank. Prime Minister David Cameron vowed never to give in to terrorism after an attack on a soldier this week in blank.
London.
Right. More than a dozen restaurants have promised free burgers for life to Charles Ramsey, the man who helped rescue 3 kidnapped women in blank.
Cleveland.
Right. According to the Pew Research Center, many teens are abandoning the social networking site blank because there are too many adults there.
Facebook.
Right. After being grounded because of battery issues on Monday, Boeing's blank officially began flying again.
Dreamliner.
Right. And Washington State man was busted for car theft while going through a McDonald's drive-thru because blank.
Because he didn't have a car and he wanted to go through a drive-thru.
No, because the woman working the window was the woman he stole the car from. In a tweet on Monday, Seth MacFarlane announced he will not return to host the blanks again in 2014.
Oscars.
Right. On Thursday, an 80-year-old Japanese climber became the oldest person ever to scale blank.
Mount Everest.
Right. Some visitors to an exhibit of fine art photography were shocked to discover the photos were of blank.
Garden trolls?
No. They were surprised to discover the photos were of themselves in their apartments. Arne Svensson took all the photos in his new exhibit, Neighbors, by pressing a telephoto lens up to his window and taking a picture of his neighbors through their windows. You can't make out the faces, but you can see the bathrobes, the nose-picking, the tighty-whities, the angry faces and clenched fists as they shout at the photographer. According to critics, this exhibition is valuable because it's an exploration of the subjective limits of privacy in an increasingly transparent world, and also because the girl in 4B is smoking. Bill, did Adam do well enough to win?
Simply, yes!
Well, then... Congratulations, Adam.
Thank you. I was rooting for Mo, though.
Well, we all
And
were.
Then Faith.
In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists to predict how Apple will recover from their new evil image. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Lumber Liquidators, supporting the Ronald McDonald House Charities, the National Braille Press, and NPR. Information at lumberliquidators.com. CSX, transporting 2 billion pounds of goods to market by train and working to help move the economy forward. CSX, how tomorrow moves. Esurance, an Allstate company, with Coverage Counselor, a car insurance tool for helping customers select coverage limits at esurance.com, and the National Association of Realtors and Advocate for Home Ownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our intern is Miles Undercover Dornboss. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Special thanks this week to the crew at the Orpheum Theater in downtown Minneapolis. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walter and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. And the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, how will Apple repair its image? Mo Rocca.
The iPhone 6 will include a brand new feature. Whenever the user begins talking or texting in a theater, he will be electrocuted.
Faith Saley.
For the Steve Jobs biopic, they're recasting Ashton Kutcher with a Care Bear.
And Adam Felber.
They're going to own it, Peter. Next St. Patrick's Day, everyone can buy an iPad tax-free.
And if Apple does any of those things, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Bill Curtis. Thanks also to Mo Rocca, Faith Saley, Adam Felber. Thanks to Tony Ball and everyone at Minnesota Public Radio. Thanks to our fantastic audience here in Minneapolis. You're great. You're so nice. And thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR.